Welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. This week, we have our weekly check-ins. We have our special segment, What I Googled This Week, where we talk about demanding drawings and predicting percentiles. And we close with our BFPs and BFNs for the week. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is episode 154. Hi, Shauna.
Hey.
Okay, so I want to hear your check-in. What's going on with you guys? How old is Cece? All that jazz.
All right. She is 2 years and 5 months now, which equals 29 months.
She's so close to 2.5.
I know. Oh, it's so weird to think that she's getting closer to 3 and farther away from babyhood.
She's closer to 2 than she is to 3. No need to panic yet.
For a little while. But here's the ironic thing. My little girl who's getting bigger and growing up has started, I think, regressing a little bit. Well, here, let me tell you about the behavior.
Okay.
And you can tell me what you think. Okay. So sleeping is fine. Potty stuff is fine. But here's her new behavior. Recently, she's been asking for help from me for everything.
Okay.
And whining along with it. Help, mama, help me. And it's stuff that she never needed help with before and kind of still doesn't need help with. Like she'll be doing a puzzle and she'll be like, mama, help me with a puzzle piece. And I'm like, it's the last puzzle piece. And like, it's right there. I know you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the playground, she's been very brave, climbing up everything without any assistance. She goes up high, she goes down. So she does everything by herself. And lately it's been like, mama, help me. Like she stops while climbing up the bars and needs some kind of reassurance or something. And so I think maybe she's... I don't know. I read about like toddlers can have little regressions like this where they start to maybe act a little more baby-like. Like they realize that they are becoming a big kid and that starts to feel scary and overwhelming. So I'm wondering if maybe that's what she's going through.
I have a question. Does she do daddy help? Daddy help? Or is it always mommy, mommy, mommy?
That's a really good question. I don't know for sure. I think she does daddy too, but it's overwhelmingly mama, I'd say.
Part of me is wondering, you know, I hear this over and over and I remind myself about it over and over, which is like this phrase that's attention seeking behavior is connection seeking behavior. And it doesn't seem like she really needs help. She just wants you to be there, right? Like she just wants you involved. Because we have the same thing, you know, Augie will just be like, mama do it, you know, like with things he knows how to do, you know, it just reverts to mama do it, mama do it. One of the things is like getting his cars onto this little like car carrier truck we have. And he's like, I can't do it. I'm like, sure you can, honey. We've seen you do it. Like take a deep breath. And I've seen you do it a million times. Mama do it. And so, and I think it's really he just wants mama to be next to him, not that he can't do it. I don't know. That's my take on it.
Yeah, that could definitely be it. A lot of the times it'll be like, mama, help, help. And I'll be like, okay, what do you need help with? And she's just like, help, help. And I'm like, but with what? And she just keeps saying, help, help. And I'm like, do you need help going potty? No. Do you need this? No. And then we get to a point where I'm like, she doesn't even know what she needs help with. She doesn't know what she's asking. So that really fits into your theory, I think, of wanting that connection. Because she's just saying help because she knows that'll get me there. She doesn't even know what she needs help with.
Yeah. And it seems tied in with the whole, what did you call it? The separation anxiety that you had. You talked about it, what, last episode or a few episodes ago. So it seems sort of related to me.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, it's funny. It's also related to the other little check-in I was going to do this week, which I didn't see the connection between until this moment. The other thing she's been doing lately is from across the house, she goes, mama, mama. Like she realized that she can scream for me from anywhere. Especially the other side of the house. And, you know, I'm usually busy. And so I gauge the intensity of the scream. Like, okay, is it like she really needs something right now or not? And so if she just keeps going and going, I'll go and check on her eventually. And half the time, I swear, she's just like sitting in her rocking chair reading a book. But she's just been calling my name because I don't know. I guess she just wants me there.
Yeah, she wants to know you're there.
Aww.
I think, yeah, she just wants... she wants that connection.
Mm-hmm. That's so sweet.
It is sweet. And I think it helps reframe it too, because I get annoyed. You know, I'm trying to do something. Mm-hmm. And he's like, Mama, do it. I'm like, you know how to fucking put the cars on the car carrier. You know, like Mama's doing mm-hmm. other things. But then if you're like, he's seeking connection. The other thing you can do in those situations, not that I'm like some massive expert, like I'm basically just parroting things I've heard on like Janet Lansbury and like my parenting TikTok that I follow is, you know, if that's what's going on, the symptom is like, Mommy, help, Mommy, do it. And you remember, wait, she's seeking connection. You can take like 5 minutes or even less and just like fill up her mommy cup and like really like just like. Really like wrap her in a big hug and just focus on her, and maybe even like, I don't know, they talk about like roughhousing in some books, not like roughhousing rough, but you know, like you do something physical where you're touching each other and hugging and stuff to make sure she really knows that like you're there, you care about her, and then maybe that'll help you get the rest of your shit done instead of having to help her with all this stuff that you know she knows how to do.
Right. Yeah. So even though I'm there physically, like the puzzle example, it's like I'm on the couch. I'm right next to her. Mm-hmm. But like if I'm being honest, I'm like looking at my phone, like looking at, you know, an email or something. So I'm not really there. And she's just like, help, Mama, help. So maybe it's kind of like, Mama, put your freaking phone down and pay attention to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I like this reframe. That's really good. I'm going to approach it with new eyes.
Yeah. You'll have to tell us how it goes.
Yeah, I will. And that's pretty much it for us this week. What's going on with you guys?
Yeah. So Sebastian's 14 weeks now. He's getting bigger. Mm-hmm. And Augie is 28 months. So he's 2 years and 4 months. We're always just a month behind you. It's so weird. That's just keeps happening. So with the baby, I have noticed something this week.
Oh, what's that?
Which I'm kind of bummed about.
Uh-huh.
The dude has a flat head.
Oh, where is it flat?
He's got a big old flat spot on the back right side of his head.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's pretty obvious because it's like where he always wants to turn when he's sleeping. Like he always wants to sleep just like with his head just slightly tilted to the right. And I've noticed that, and I brought it up at his 2 month appointment, but the doctor was sort of like, you know, just try to reposition his head if you see him looking to the right, but it's not a big deal. They usually like grow out of it, basically. So I didn't really worry, and I kind of repositioned his head here and there, but he would always roll it right back, and I didn't really make a big deal out of it because I was like, whatever, kids get flat heads, right? But now I'm looking at it, and I'm like, it's getting really flat. Like, if you look straight on, he looks normal. And if you look from the left side in the back, he looks typical. I should say normal is not a great word to use it, but he, you know, his head looks round. If you look at it from the back right, though, it's like little flat, I don't know, with like a cliff.
Oh, no.
So now I'm like, oh, shit, we're going to have to get a helmet, which I know a lot of kids do. So the term for it is plagiocephaly, which just means flat head. And I started doing a deep dive researching this. And what I found is that you can like do some like physical therapy stuff before you get a helmet. And I've started following this account on Instagram called Baby Begin, at Baby Begin. And they're like a physical therapy group, I guess, or person who just like, they're in Texas, unfortunately. But what they do is like, they just deal with babies with flat heads or narrow heads or like misshapen heads, right? Which is super common, apparently. Like up to half of babies now have some kind of weird flattening on their head. I keep saying weird because I'm like putting my own judgment on it. It's actually not weird because it's like 50-50 if your kid has it. And that's because of the back to sleep campaign, right?
Right.
They all sleep on their back of their heads and then their poor little noggins get misshapen. But so now I'm following like stuff on this Baby Begin account, and I'm doing these like exercises where I'm like stretching his neck like so he'll look to the left more.
Okay.
Trying to do some like body stretches with him where I like stretch his little arms and legs out on the diagonal and then touch them together and then do it again. And the good news is he loves it. He thinks it's hilarious.
Oh, that's good.
He doesn't love me stretching his neck. Like, it's not that he gets fussy or crying or anything, because they say if they do, you stop. But he's just like, he clearly wants to look to the right. So I'm just doing everything I can to always have him look to the left. Mm-hmm. We got rid of our baby swing just in case. Because, you know, like when they're in containers like that, it can make it worse.
Oh, so, okay.
And he didn't like that thing anyway. So I'm focusing on like giving him a lot of floor time, a lot of tummy time, trying to stretch his neck. And then I took a picture, like they tell you to take a picture a very specific way, like from the top where their nose is pointing straight up. So I took a picture. I'm going to try to like take a picture every week to see if I'm making any progress. But mm-hmm. yeah, this is a new project.
Yeah, you're tackling it.
Unflatten Sebastian's head.
I will say that both of my girls had flat heads from lying on their back and sleeping on their back. And both of them went away when they started sleeping on their tummies, like around, when was that, 6 months old? And it wasn't a problem at all. I don't even remember worrying about it. So I feel like maybe he'll be okay, but I don't know. I guess you'll have to assess that with the pediatrician, maybe at the 4 month appointment.
Yeah, which is in what, like 2 weeks. So yeah, so we'll see. But I'll see what I can do in those 2 weeks. I mean, their heads are apparently super moldable at this age. So
well, obviously, if they're getting flat just from sleeping.
I know. So I'm sure a lot of listeners have gone through this. So if you have any advice for me, let me know.
Yeah,
I need to know. So but I don't know. I just feel like we're heading towards Helmet Land, but we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's what's going on with the baby. As far as the toddler goes, so in our world, we've been talking about the house, you know, we sold our house and we're buying a new house and everything's moving forward. Like the buyers have lifted all their contingencies from our house. So like that's happening for sure.
All right.
So it looks like it's really happening now. And I'm starting to think about how I'm going to deal with this transition for Augie.
Mm-hmm.
That is something I'm actually fairly nervous about, because when Sebastian was born, we went through like a couple pretty big regressions, like sleep and nap regressions and potty regression that still hasn't resolved itself. And I'm just starting to get a little concerned about like, how am I going to get him to understand the move? Because one of the things that really like broke my heart was one of the nights we had to stay in the hotel, he was kind of having a hard time. He bonked his head or something. And when he was crying, he said, "I want to go home. I want to go home." And that made me think, oh no, like what's going to happen the first time he has like a hard time in the new house? And he's going to be like, "I want to go home." And I have to tell him like, we're never going home again. Like this is our home now. I don't know what to do.
That's a big concept for a little guy.
I know.
We moved into this house when Elle was about 20 months old, and I was concerned about the transition too. And the first thing I did was set up her bedroom to look almost exactly like it did in the other apartment. So before we moved in, I got into the house and painted her room to look exactly the same as it did in the apartment. I got like the same wall decals and everything, actually.
That's smart.
The movers came and the first thing I did was like put her crib there, you know, put it against the same, like the blue accent wall, just like it was in the apartment, made her room just perfect. Like the rest of the house was a complete disaster, right? In boxes. But her room was unpacked. Her toys were in there, her clothes, her dresser, like everything was perfect. And it was her space. Cause I figured her bedroom is really what feels like the most homey to her. It's where she sleeps and gets comfort. And I think that helped a lot, because the rest of it was just thoroughly exciting to her. She thought it was amazing to move into a new place, and it was a big, exciting thing. And I wonder if your guy might feel some of that way too, because you're going to have a really awesome yard and a lot more space he can play. Maybe you could get like a really cool outdoor toy ahead of time and have it ready, you know, so it could be like a thing that's,
oh, that's
really
a good
exciting
idea
for him to look forward to about the new place, and just make it fun.
That's a good idea. I should definitely have some kind of toy to welcome him. And an outdoor one is a really great idea, because it would also keep him busy outdoors while like all the moving stuff was happening.
Yeah.
That's smart. Yeah. And, you know, the decals, I'm going to do that. I'm going to order the exact same wall decals. We have these like rock and roll decals. I'm going to get those on the wall. So that's good. Good ideas. I like this.
Thanks. I think it'll help. I hope so. I hope he's excited about it. The way you described how he was running around in the backyard and spinning, and I think he's going to be thrilled.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay in the long run. I just, you know, I guess I just get so uncomfortable with him being sad. And I know that it's part of the deal and I need to get over that. But I, you know, it just, and you know, I have mixed feelings because I'm going to miss this house. Like, it's the house I brought my babies home to, you know, and I just, it's just not big enough for us anymore. So we have to move, but it's all for the best. The one thing I had thought of doing was I was thinking I'm going to make like a social story book, the way that John and Allie mentioned in the episode 150 in our interview with them. They talked about social stories where it's like basically you make a little like picture book for your kids to tell them, get them ready for something that's going on, right? Something that's going to happen. And I thought about doing that. So I think I'm going to try to like get photos of the new house and like put together a little book for him so we can read it before the move.
Yeah.
So he can get excited.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. I just have to, you know, do it.
Yeah. Squeeze that into all the other stuff you got going on.
Yeah. No problem. But anyway, that's what's going on with us this week. Do you want to take a quick break and then come back with our special segment?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool.
Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids, but you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why StoryWorth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give StoryWorth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted StoryWorth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/BFP.
That's storyworth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP.
We're back, and this week our special segment is What I Googled This Week, where we admit the things that we have typed into our internet search browser recently about parenting, pregnancy, whatever is going on in our life related to those things. Laura, what have you Googled recently?
All right. What I Googled this week was how to draw a combine harvester.
You don't know how to do that off the top of your head?
It's so weird. I don't.
Dog, house, combine harvester, you know, as you do.
Yeah, draw a combine harvester. Yeah. I also Googled how to draw a skid steer loader and how to draw a bucket excavator. So,
okay. Yeah.
This is what happens when you have a truck obsessed toddler and a bunch of sidewalk chalk in the backyard.
So he's requesting that you draw him different trucks.
Oh my God, so much. It's so annoying, actually, because it's like, instead of him drawing, he wants me to draw all these like very specific trucks. And then I don't know how to draw them. And so I make the mistake of pulling my phone out and I search how to draw a combine harvester. And like, believe it or not, there's a lot of information on the internet about how to draw different types of trucks. Like, clearly I'm not the first person to have this problem. But then I'm looking on my phone. He's like, I want to see the truck. And he's like, I want to see that one. And he just starts scrolling. And so we spend our outdoor time with him sitting in my lap, scrolling on my phone, looking at different like line art drawings of different types of obscure trucks. Like,
oh, he's playing you. He is so smart.
And do you want to know what's really eerie? Hmm. I was listening to the Janet Lansbury podcast Unruffled during like one of my like 3 a.m. feeds recently, right? And I shit you not, this was basically the exact story that someone wrote in. They wrote in to Janet to tell them that their 2.5-year-old was like obsessively asking them to draw very specific trucks, namely excavators, with chalk. And it had like stolen their child's joy of like how to draw. Like basically instead of drawing themselves, they were just like asking the mom to draw. And the mom was writing in as like a success story saying like one day she just like remembered her Janet Lansbury teachings and said, no, you know, I'm not going to draw for you anymore. I want you to draw, and like cut him off. And it like apparently changed everything. And now the kid is exploring how to use chalk himself and all this stuff. Right. And I'm listening to this being like, great. So my plan of just like hiding the chalk isn't going to work. Like,
So have you tried cutting him off?
No, because I haven't been outside with the chalk since I listened to that podcast. And also, like, I would have to get everyone on board. I'd have to get Corey and Amber on board. And I know they're not. I know he plays them, too, because I'll, like, come out to get something from the backyard and I'll see, like, mail trucks and backhoes and all kinds of stuff. Flatbed trucks all over. We have, like, a big concrete pad in our back with like a concrete bench so you can draw all over. And yeah, they're just covered with trucks that like clearly the 2-year-old did not draw. So I have to get everyone on the same page and, you know, it's going to mean enduring a meltdown. So I'm not really looking forward to it.
Yeah, he's not going to love it. It's not going to go as easily as the Janet Lansbury listener. It's going to be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, yeah.
But it probably will be better in the end.
Yeah, yes, I agree. And like the whole point is that like if I'm drawing a combine harvester for him, he can't replicate that, right? He doesn't have the motor skills to replicate it. And so he's going to be frustrated with anything he draws because it doesn't look as good as my amazing combine harvester. Not to brag, but looks pretty good.
I'm sure you've got the combine harvester drawing skills down these days.
I do, actually. I should do like an Instagram live of me drawing different trucks.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, yeah, that is what I Googled this week.
Funny.
Shauna, do you have a Google search that you'd like to share with us?
Yes. Here's what I Googled recently. My child is obsessed with acting like a dog.
I wonder why. Could it be because you have two dogs?
Yeah, maybe. You know, actually, this is Elle who's really obsessed.
I was going to ask which child. Which child is this? Yeah.
Elle has been obsessed with acting like a dog for almost a year now. And it's not just dogs. It's also cats, lions, and cheetahs. I think those are like her main animals. And to the point where sometimes it's like she'll wake up and be like, I'm a dog today. And she's just down on all fours. And she is she's mastered like running with her front paws. They're not paws, they're hands. Okay. She's mastered running like with her hands on the ground and her feet on the ground and like leaping. Like she really does look animal-like. It's kind of crazy. She's so strong. But anyway, so it's to the point where I'm just like, is it normal for my kid to like be so obsessed with acting like a dog?
And?
Okay, so I found an article in New York Times called Why Won't My Kids Stop Pretending to Be a Lion? And that's relevant to me, too, because lions are big in my house. So, of course, I'm like, okay, we got to click it. And in the article, they mention a Dr. Tracy Gleason, who's a professor of psychology at Wellesley College, who studies preschoolers' imaginary play. So people are actually doing research on this kind of thing.
That's fun.
And this type of play is called theory of mind. And Dr. Gleason says, quote, they're doing a lot of exploring of what it's like to be someone else, to feel something else, to interact in different ways with other people at that age. And the article does mention that, like, up to 5 years old, it's pretty normal. And, you know, my girl is five, but I'm also like, she's also lived in a pandemic with zero friends for the last year. So yeah. I'm giving her a lot of leeway here. And I do think she's just really enjoys feeling like what her body is like being, you know, down there like a dog. And of course, you know, they love putting water in bowls and like licking it up like dog, you know, and like all this stuff that's just different and not human like.
So my question is, does Cece copy her and also act like a dog?
Yes, all the time. All the time. Elle does it more. It's more self-motivated for her, right? She thinks it's really fun. And Cece sees Elle doing it and will run around the house like a dog or a cat, meowing and roaring. And also in this article, they talk about like why the children might be doing this. And there's a lot of different reasons. Some of it's attention seeking. Some of it's like not being comfortable with rules or boundaries. And as a parent, you can think about like, why are they doing it in this moment? And then you can address the behavior if you need to. So depending on why they're doing the behavior, you can decide if you need to address it or not. Right? Like a lot of the time, it's just them playing pretend and being silly. And then sometimes it's like, okay, enough with this, right? Because we're eating dinner and we don't eat like dogs at the dinner table.
Yeah, I can see that being a problem.
Exactly. Or I'm trying to talk to you and you're answering me in barks or meows. Like, that's a problem. And so the article offers some ideas of like how to address it, you know, like set a timer, like, okay, you can spend one more minute being a dog, stuff like that. And the other thing I was going to mention about it is that I noticed when we started going to playgrounds, she started acting like a dog and running around on all fours at the playground. And I am just like, that triggers me and embarrassment in me, right? I'm like, oh my God, like so embarrassed, Steve. She's running around like a dog, and he doesn't care, right? He's like, whatever, she's a kid. Like, that's what kids do. They play pretend. And I'm like, but it's so weird. And like, the other kids, aren't they going to like think she's weird? And he's like, if they do, like, they'll say something and like, she'll learn from, you know, peer pressure and not getting the response that she is hoping for from other kids. And then she just won't do it. So I'm like, okay. So it's been a whole thing over here in Dogland.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, your baggage about it is your baggage, and just let her have fun as long as it's not interfering with her enjoyment of life. So,
yeah. Well, she loves it. She loves being an animal. That's for sure.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. You have two dogs. It seems like that would be the natural move.
Yeah, true. All right. So that's mine. What do you have for us?
Okay, I have one more. I Googled heavy lifting activities for toddlers.
What? Are you getting him into weightlifting? What's going on here?
Yeah, I want him to bench press.
Bulk him up.
So, as we know, Augie is very energetic, and the kid, like, does not nap as much these days, and, like, we've tried everything to try to get him to nap. And I was scrolling in my, like, Facebook moms groups, and I saw someone talking about having a kid who's, like, highly sensory seeking. And I was like, huh, I wonder if that describes Augie. And then I, like, looked at the description, and it was, like, kids who are constantly, like, literally bouncing off the walls, and kids who just cannot seem to exhaust themselves no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's ringing a bell. Because, so, if you recall, like, recently he walked a full mile, still didn't nap, like, didn't faze him at all. And he will do this thing where he, like, runs around the house and, like, will physically just, like, run into furniture like a freaking pinball. Like, he just pinballs around our house. And we're always like, Augie, chill out. Like, you're going to get hurt. You're going to get bonked. And, of course, he always does. But, like, he just has to do it. And then he also does this thing where he, like, practices falling. Like, he goes to our baby care mat and, like, jumps and falls intentionally. And he just thinks it's hilarious. So in this post, someone was like, for sensory seeking kids like this, one way to actually, like, exhaust them is to give them heavy lifting activities. And I was like, okay, but how?
Give them some bricks to move around the yard?
Basically. Yeah. So I went to Google, and here's what I found out. So the thing about heavy lifting for toddlers is obviously you have to be safe. So a brick could fall and break their toe. You can't do that. But you can put heavy things in a backpack and have them carry it around.
Okay.
So, like, loading up a backpack with all kinds of things and having them walk around with it. Another really common heavy lifting activity is pushing a fully loaded hamper, laundry hamper, around the house, like dragging it and pushing it. And again, this is one of those things where it's like, I thought I was the only one. And of course, there's a million Google results for it. A lot of places call them heavy work activities. So,
okay.
There's this website called Your Kids Table, and it has a list of 40 heavy work activities to regulate kids and toddlers. And here are some examples. So for toddlers, they have moving canned goods into a basket. So, like, just going into the pantry, I guess, and getting a bunch of heavy cans.
Yeah.
Pushing and pulling laundry baskets. They say tie a rope around a box or a laundry basket and allow them to pull it. So stuff like that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to implement some of these. He has a little kid backpack that we haven't been using that I'm now like, okay, we're going to take this to the park every time and, like, put a bunch of toys in it. And you're going to, like, wear it around.
He can wear that while he walks the mile.
Exactly. So we'll see. But I thought it was so funny for me to be, like, Googling how to get my toddler to do CrossFit, basically.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. They have toddler CrossFit gyms in LA. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Probably. Yeah, get him a little mini tire to move around.
Exactly. Yes.
Anyway, so that was my other thing I Googled this week. Shauna, do you have another one for us?
I do, but I think we should take a quick break and come back with it.
Okay, sounds good.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. there's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor, and I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important, and therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's bestsellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
LolaVie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. Okay, we are back, and Shauna has one more What I Googled this week to share with us. Shauna, hit us. What is it?
Okay, the other thing I Googled recently is how tall will my 2-year-old be?
Oh.
Like as an adult.
Yeah. Oh, and?
And turns out there's actually some methods to try to figure out how tall your 2-year-old will be when they grow up.
Okay, do tell. Because okay. Now yeah. I'm curious. Now I want to know.
Yeah. The first method is to double their height when they're 2.
Oh, wow.
Which seems crazy to me because she seems so small. And I'm like, it's just like one more of you and you're going to be as tall as me or taller. Mm-hmm. It seems so weird.
Yeah. Excuse me while I go to my baby tracker app to find out how tall he was at his appointment.
I do not have a baby tracker app, but recently I started measuring the girls like in their door jam, you know? I don't know if you did that as a kid, but
I did do that as a kid, and I've been wanting to do that. And you know what? I'm glad we didn't start because we're moving. But I'm going to do that at the new house, for sure.
Yeah, do it at the new house. Each girl has their little measuring in their door jam for their bedroom. They're so excited about it. And I actually did the very first one when Cece was 2 years old, like a week before she turned 2. So I found out about this method, and I was like, oh, yes, I can actually like figure out how tall she's going to be when she's grown up. Which, caveat, none of these are for certain. Like, this
of course,
it's probably going to be all wrong, but whatever. I'm a curious mom. So that measurement was 32 and a half inches.
Okay.
So I multiply that by two, that's 65. So she's going to be 5'5".
Okay.
When she grows up.
That tracks.
And that's taller than me. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, you know, just a little taller than the average woman, right? Mm-hmm. I think 5'4 is average, if I recall.
Yeah. I'm 5'2 and change, but I have some tall people in my family, like my mom, dad, brother, like mm-hmm. that side that is all tall. So
why did I never know you were that short?
Big personality, baby. Did you figure out Augie's height when he was two?
Yeah, I just pulled it up. So he was 34 inches at his 2-year appointment. So that would be 68 inches. So that would be 5'8". So, you know, Corey's 5'10".
Yeah.
So maybe I'm 5'6". So mm-hmm. it seems a little on the low side, but who knows?
Yeah. Like I said, they're not certain.
But you're right. It is ballpark.
Yes.
It's not, when you said that, I'd be like, no way. There's no way it's just double their height. But yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems impossible because they just seem so tiny to us right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you said there was another way you could figure it out. So what's that?
Yes, there's two ways. First, follow the curve is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
Since you track Augie's weight and height in the tracker, you probably see that he falls somewhere along the curve of like percentiles, right? Of height.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. So you can, if your tracker goes out that far, you could find one online that kind of goes out that far. You could follow that curve. So if he's at like 60 percentile for height right now, chances are he'll be 60th percentile for height as an adult. So you could kind of see what that height is.
Yeah, he's always been right around 50th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the 34 inches at his 2-year appointment is actually, he was at 37th percentile. But I have a feeling, let me change it and see if I just do a half inch taller what it gets you. Yeah, so if you're a half inch taller, it gets you to 53rd percentile. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like measuring the height of a squirmy 2-year-old at the doctor's office is probably not super accurate.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they like have them lie on the table and whatever. Yeah.
I wasn't even there for it, so I can't vouch for it. So, you know, mm-hmm. I think he's probably around 50th percentile. Is my guess. What about CC?
I don't know. I don't remember exactly, but I want to say she's below average.
Okay.
Both of my girls are like around 40th percentile for height, I think. So the last way to figure this out is using a little bit of math.
Okay.
So we might need to bust out our calculators.
All right. I got mine.
Here are the steps. Okay. Record the genetic mother's height.
Okay. I am 5'6", so that's 66 inches, right?
Right. I'm going to put 5'3". I'll be generous to myself. Record the genetic father's height and average the two together.
Okay, so Corey's 5'10", so that's 70. So that's 136 divided by two. That's 68. So that's okay. 5'8".
5'8". Okay, and then it says add 2.5 inches to that average if you are predicting a boy's height, and subtract 2.5 inches to that average if you're predicting a girl's height.
I see. So yeah, that would put him at 5'10.5".
Oh, okay. So a little bit taller than the other method. That would bring CC at 5'3.5". So about the same.
Huh. This is fascinating.
Yes. We'll have to just wait a good 16 years to see how this all pans out, and we'll update everybody.
Yeah. Make sure you tune in to episode 5020.
The results will be riveting. Okay. Anyway, so that's my last what I Googled this week. Should we move on to our BFPs and BFNs?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Okay, so we close every show with our big fat positives or our big fat negatives of the week. Shauna, do you have a BFP or a BFN for us?
I have a BFP.
Yay.
Okay, so this is a product that we've had around the house for a while now, maybe about a year, and it is the little star projector nightlight thing that my girls use in their bedrooms. They each have one. I love it because it's totally affordable. You look up star projectors on Amazon or anywhere, and you know, you get hit with like really fancy star projectors, and they can be a lot of money. And I'm like, I don't need like it to be a perfect representation of the cosmos in 4K, HD, whatever. Just give me some fuzzy stars and some light. So this thing is great. It's $14.99 as of today on Amazon. It's called Luck Kid. baby nightlight moon star projector, and then a bunch of other keywords in the title. But yeah, it's just this little dome. It's plastic. It rotates. You can change the color of the stars. There can be like multiple colors of stars. Like there can be three colors at once, or it can just be one color. The stars can stay stationary or they can rotate around the room. And they've been fantastic. The girls love them. They use them every single night. I forget to turn them off every single night. So they run 24 hours a day. And they've been going strong for like a year. We love them.
I kind of feel like I need to do something like that, partially because I was reading a book recently and it was like night, you know, because so many kids' books end at night because they want the kids to go to sleep. And it was like a beautiful landscape with stars. And Augie was like, "What's that?" He's like pointing at the stars. It's like, "Oh, those are stars. What are stars?" I was like, "Oh, you probably don't really know because we live in Los Angeles where mm-hmm. there's so much light pollution and you always go to bed before it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what stars are. You don't know what stars are." Oh, that's, my God.
Wow. That's kind of mind blowing and so true.
Yeah. He knows what the moon is. He's like a moon hawk. He will spot it. If there's like a sliver of moon in the sky, he's like, "Moon." And you're like, "Oh, shit, you're right. There is a moon right there. I did not see that." But stars, not so much. So, okay, I might have to get one of those.
Yeah. I will say it's not a great representation of the reality of space. The stars are a little hazy, you know? It's a little blurry. It's not the perfect projection, but the kids love it. It gets the job done. It's $14.99. It's great.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah. All right. What about you? Do you have a BFP or a BFN?
Oh, I have a BFN.
Uh-oh. What?
So, you know, I was talking about how, like, Sebastian was, like, a super chill baby who was sleeping super well. You know how I talked about that was so confidently on the podcast?
Yes.
Like, nothing was ever going to change and he would just be a chill, good sleeper forever.
Uh-huh.
Remember that? Do you remember how confident I sounded?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take it that that did not stick or what?
Yeah. Yeah. He's still a pretty chill guy during the day, but his sleep has gotten way worse all of a sudden. And I don't know why, Shauna. I don't know why. And it's pissing me off.
Uh-huh.
Like, we had a couple long stretches and I'm just like, "Oh, it's going to get so much better from here until the 4-month regression." But like, still, I'm like, I have weeks until that happens. Like, I'm going to get some good sleep. And like this week, suddenly, it's just like, the witching hour is just impossible. Like, I've been trying to do some kind of bedtime with him and it's like basically impossible. I'm looking at my snoo logs right now. And
for those who don't know, describe what a snoo log is.
Oh, yeah. So the snoo automatically tracks. It's the snoo is his fancy robot bassinet and it automatically tracks like when he's calm or when he's like cried and it's kicked up. And if it's this little like upside down U shape, that's the 24 hours of the day. And when it's blue, it's calm. And when it's red, he's not calm. And like on Tuesday, I put him in the snoo at like 6:56 and he just fussed for like 20 straight minutes, but not enough to make it shut off, just enough to be fussy. Mm-hmm. And then he was up from like 7:45 to 10, which must mean that I was like trying to calm him or boobing him or whatever during that time. Then he was up again at 10:30. Then he was up again at 3. And he's like being soothed multiple times in the middle of the night. Here, I'm going to send you another screenshot of a like shitty night. Let's see. Saturday. Oh, yeah. Saturday. Let me send you this screenshot.
Okay.
Okay. It is on its way to you.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot of red.
It's a lot of red.
The more red you see in these logs, the worse the baby is sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he was up at 1:30, 2:15, 2:56, 3:21, and then I finally just fed him at like 4:15 in the morning.
Oh my God.
And, you know, I was up like replacing his pacifier every time in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like from 7:40 p.m. basically until 11, like it was just on and off. There are other nights where like it looks like it's just tiny slivers of the snoo being on because it was like we kept trying to put him down and it just didn't work. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but I'm tired. And
yeah.
I'm just here also. Part of the reason I wanted to talk about this also is that I think it's so easy to compare to other moms. And I think when I said on the show that like we got a full night's sleep, I was really excited because I was resting. But I think what it can come off as is like, oh my God, she got a full night's sleep with her 8 week old and I've never gotten even close. And like people have even written in and been like, how do we do that? Like, I can't believe my baby didn't do that. So I want you to know, like the reality is, you know, I don't always talk about all the shitty nights we have, you know, like I talked about that one night we got 8 hours of sleep because it was so glorious. But like,
yes,
it's constantly in flux and always changing. And yeah, sometimes you get a really great sleeper, you know, like Elle, who just slept through really early. But most of the time it's up and down. And especially until you sleep train, if you choose to sleep train, like it's just, it's anyone's guess what's going to happen.
It's
but
true.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been tough, but
I'm sorry.
It's called having a baby. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like that for us with Cece for those first like 5 months or so until we made a concerted effort to sleep train. And then it gets better. Mm-hmm. You're almost there. You're getting close. And you are kind of close to the 4 month sleep regression. I mean, he's what, a couple weeks shy of that?
Yeah. You know, you're right. And Augie did go through it a little bit early, but maybe it is the 4 month regression, but we're still like 3 weeks away. I don't know. It just seems really early, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. Okay. I'm just tired.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Go take a nap.
Good idea. I'll try to fit that in somehow. But the good news is I think this is the end of our episode. So if you want to take a nap, listeners, go for it.
Yes, do it. Take that delicious nap. And if you have any what I Googled this week that you want to share with us, you know we want to hear those. Laura, where can everyone reach us?
We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at BFP Podcast. We have a website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com. If you want to send us an email, you can always include a voice memo in that email. Just send it to contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com. Finally, if you want to join the coolest community on the internet, go to Facebook, search Big Fat Positive Community, request to join, answer those membership questions, and we will send you straight through to all the amazing discussions we're having in there.
If you love our show, please go rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts and spread the word. Let your friends, neighbors, coworkers, the world know about BFP. Our show is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.